It's been a big week for hundreds of now former Toyota workers in Melbourne. On Monday, the company began a process of letting go 350 of its factory workers at their plant in Altona, Victoria. Since then, there's been a much heated talk about the way in which the company went about the process of downsizing. Some human resources experts and union representatives have said that the workers have been dealt with unfairly. So this case raises some interesting questions about how the Fair Work Act is being implemented and if it is in fact fair. With a review of the Act underway, we've asked Law Professor Andrew Stewart to join us on the line from Adelaide. He's studied the Fair Work Act and its provisions with forensic intensity, and he joins me now off the back of a breakfast lecture, I gather. Hello, Andrew.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us at the tail end of our show instead of the top, which is when we would have loved you to be with us. Can we clarify the process that Toyota followed in deciding to reduce their workforce?
Well, what Toyota decided was that they wanted to downsize their organisation and reduce the number of workers who are performing particular jobs. Now, often in a situation of redundancy, what a company will do is to close down a particular work site or close down a department. This isn't one of those cases. This is a case where the company still wants all the same work done, but just by a fewer number of people, so it needs to find a way of selecting workers. Now, what can sometimes happen in that situation is for a company to simply seek volunteers and try and do everything by agreement.
Which I gather Toyota did. There was a call in collaboration with the union. They did put out a call for voluntary redundancies.
That's right. But now they've come to the point where, having identified the people they were prepared to let go through that process, they've now said, well, we haven't found enough people, or at least enough of the right, what we think are the right people, to let go that way. So we're going to select some people for involuntary redundancy.
And it's how they did this, isn't it, that's particularly interesting here?
Well, I think it's important to emphasise there's two different angles to this. There's the selection process, which may or may not raise some legal issues, and we'll get on and talk about those. I think what also caused a lot of comment, particularly on the day that this was announced on Monday, was the way in which they, having identified the workers, informed them and then essentially took them through an exit process. I think it's fair to say that that the way that was handled has not presented a very good look and has left Toyota not just with a PR problem, but with a problem as far as its existing workers. Well, it was the way it was seen, whether it was whether this is fair or not. The way it was seen was dealing with workers in a very undignified way. You know, having security guards. Now, Toyota said, "Look, the union asked us to provide extra security," but there's no doubt that the look of the process wasn't a good one, and that's something the company's going to have to continue to deal with. But that's an issue as far as their existing workers and indeed their reputation is concerned. The main legal issues, if they're going to be any, are going to come back to this question of, well, what were the selection criteria?
Well, they applied, I understand, and of course I don't have the complete picture, but they applied a checklist to every member of the Toyota workforce in that factory, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. They what they did was to ask a series of questions or apply a series of criteria, which are essentially about performance levels, about commitment to work, about willingness to resolve disputes, about presence at work. So, you know, you were scored less highly if you were absent from work. One of them, I've got a list here which has been reported, suggests that one of them was Toyota Way values. So, in other words, commitment to the Toyota Way and the particular charter that company has.
Hard to measure that.
Well, indeed.
On a checklist.
And acceptance to change, flexibility and learning, involving willingness to multi-skill, accepting requests to meet reasonable operational requirements and so on. So, in a sense, there's nothing that unusual about what this company did. It's just that there were so many workers involved and so high profile that it's attracted a lot of publicity.
Yes, I mean, imagine it's the right of organisations to devise a metric like this to work out who should be targeted for redundancy? Is that, can they do that, that sort of application of a checklist legally?
They can, as long as they are not discriminatory in the way that they implement that. Look, historically, a lot of organisations had a much simpler approach, which was last on, first off. In other words, you let go the people who you've most recently hired. Mm. But that in itself is discriminatory, or can be discriminatory, for example, against younger people. But it's also not a good way of retaining your best employees. So what Toyota have decided to do, and what a lot of organisations will now do in this situation, is try and figure out who are our best people. We want to keep our best people, and provided under the Fair Work Act, they can do that, and they can't have that challenged, provided two conditions are satisfied. Firstly, they need to have gone through any consultation processes that are required through their enterprise agreement, and Toyota say they've done that. And the second thing they need to do to make sure there's no legal challenge is to ensure that there's nothing discriminatory either in the way these criteria are constructed or the way they're implemented. Now, what the union is saying is, oh, we're concerned that union officials or health and safety
have been targeted.
Mm. And if the evidence showed that the criteria had been applied in that way, or if indeed Toyota can't prove that they've applied the criteria in a non-discriminatory way, then there might be some prospect of legal proceedings. But I have to say, Toyota is a big company. They will have good legal advice. It's inconceivable to me that they wouldn't have thought these issues through before they went ahead with this process. Their lawyers certainly would have said to them, look, here's what you need to be careful about. So if indeed they've been involved in discriminatory selection, then that's a pretty major slip up.
Andrew Stewart, there are suggestions that unions are using some of the provisions, the so-called general protection provisions of the Fair Work Act, to try and pressure larger companies to avoid shedding union staff. Is that your perception of what's happening? And just perhaps you might want to remind us what those general protection provisions cover.
Yeah, the general protections are a set of provisions in the Fair Work Act that prohibit various forms of discriminatory treatment at work or misrepresentation about workplace rights or coercion. Now, most of these provisions have been in the legislation for a long time. In fact, the core provisions have been in federal legislation for over 100 years. And most of the current provisions, in fact, owe their origin to prohibitions that were introduced by the Howard government. But they were formulated in a new way under the Fair Work Act. And there's certainly been a lot of anecdotal evidence to suggest that unions or employee lawyers are now routinely putting forward complaints that the general protections have been breached as a way either of putting pressure on an employer to change a decision or in many cases where someone's already been dismissed to get some form of agreed compensation payment. Now, this is an issue that's been raised before the panel that's reviewing the Fair Work Act for the federal government at the moment.
Yes.
And my expectation would be that there may well be some recommendations to try and tighten up these provisions. In my view, it's not so much that the provisions themselves are too broad, although there may be one or two drafting issues that could be addressed. It's more that it's been seen as an easy way of threatening legal action in order to get a result. And, you know, I don't know. My view, the unions haven't been behaving improperly in raising these issues, but there may be some question about whether it should be quite as easy.
Is it the most effective way to initiate an arbitration process, threaten legal action? Within an industry like car manufacturing, there is a strong union presence, of course.
Yes.
What about for an employee who's not represented by a union and is dismissed by, well, let's say a small business or a small company, if they think they've been unfairly laid off? What recourse do they have?
Well, for a start, if you've been made redundant, You can't bring an unfair dismissal claim against your employee, even if you otherwise qualify for protection. So, for example, you've worked for, if it's a small business, you've worked there at least 12 months. You can't bring an unfair dismissal claim if you've genuinely been made redundant, unless you can show that your employer hasn't considered an option to redeploy you somewhere else in the business, or unless the employer hasn't complied with any consultation obligations before making the decision. But in many cases, it will be true that employees can't bring an unfair dismissal claim. Now, if they think they've been discriminated against, if they think they've been singled out because of their ethnic background or their gender or their age or the fact that they're they've made complaints about their working
conditions. Can they challenge their employer? Do they need to go to the Fair Work Ombudsman, for example?
Well, they've got two choices, essentially. One is to take a matter straight to Fair Work Australia for conciliation, and they would need to do that within 60 days of being dismissed.
Yes.
But the other option is certainly to go and talk to the Fair Work Ombudsman. Now, the Ombudsman has got general responsibility for enforcing the provisions of the Fair Work Act, including these general protections.
Okay.
And the Ombudsman has shown itself as willing to take on some of these cases where it feels there's an important public point to establish.
Okay, look, thank you so much for giving us a more complete picture of some of the options that are and I guess the issues surrounding the Toyota case. Andrew Stewart, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Professor Andrew Stewart, he's John Bray Professor of Law at the University of Adelaide, and we'll have details of Andrew's books on the Fair Work Act on our website, abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters. abc.net.au/radionational/lifematters. Next on Life Matters, our Friday talkback, a really fantastic topic, solitude. In our fast and busy world, it's hard to get time alone, isn't it? So do you need solitude? Where do you go for it? What do you do when you're seeking solitude? Do you live alone? Is that the way you get the solitude that you need? Or do you fear solitude? Is it something that you're uncomfortable with? What about your kids? What about your friends and family? Solitude, our Friday talkback. Get in touch with us after 9 a.m.